Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a commentary episode, and if you haven't been here for a while, a commentary episode is where we watch Season 7, Episode 16, Goodbye Charlie, while we record Season 7, Episode 16, Goodbye Charlie, of NYPD Blue Balls. So, if you want to watch the episode while we are talking about it, you can press play after we say 1, 2, 3, and you will be following along with us slightly. We never even get it synced up between the two of us. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever podcast platform you're using to listen to it. It helps us get seen in the algorithm, and more importantly, it may help people to see more episodes of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, which is really the whole point of this entire thing. To get more people watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. Anyway, the song's about to end and the episode's about to start, so here we go. 1, 2, 3, click. Hello, everybody, and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. We're watching Season 7, Episode 16, Goodbye, Charlie.
Goodbye, Charlie.
It's not the song. It's Cheer Up, Charlie, and you know this. Deborah Monk.
Do you normally just sit in front of your mirror and stare at pictures?
No, I don't, but I'm not a recovering alcoholic who's upset that my partner is depressed. So this is, what's her name? Well, it's Deborah Monk is the actress, but I forgot. Katie. Sipowicz's ex-wife.
My ex. Meeting my sex.
Okay, Michael Scott.
but is that Michael Scott?
I'm pretty sure that was Michael Scott.
No, that was Andy Bernard.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
It was Nard
Dog? It's when the front desk girl meets that girl he was like talking to.
Yes. This is where Sipowicz just gets pissy because of what Sorensen was doing yesterday.
The question I have to ask myself is, how does Sipowicz have any friends?
He doesn't.
But, like, everyone just, like, he goes off on everybody.
Also, what's great is he's like, God, I can't believe my partner's doing this for the skill junkie. And then his wife is like, do you see visions?
Of your dead son.
Of him every now and then. And he's like, I think he's like, oh gosh. And she's like, no, like, do you ever see like glimpses of him in other people? And then she says, like, the closest I've ever seen him is in Danny Sorensen. It's almost like the writers are begging us to like Sorensen.
Yeah, they're so hard. They're trying to make him like likable so hard. Like, oh, like, look, even we're trying to say, like, there's a little bit of, like, this character's son in him that you used to like, oh, they're pushing it so hard.
And it's often a comfort to me when I think of them. But it's also, this scene does provide something else that Theo hasn't been feeling well.
Yeah. Which Theo's kind of a little bitch.
Theo is kind of a little bitch. Theo the child, kind of a little bitch. Kyle.
Check back with me when we finish this show, and then we'll see.
And then Andy kind of breaks down. He's like, I did see Andrew Jr. once in a dream. And if you remember NYPD Blue Balls heads from years and years ago, I believe he saw Jesus in that dream, too.
Yeah.
Who was, like, a truck driver.
Yeah.
And then Theo comes in to break up the depression party. What were you talking about? Oh, your older brother that died.
The older brother that you'll never meet.
And then also, like, this kid, this fucking kid, he's like, they're like, what do you want for breakfast? He's like, candy? They're like, let's make you some chocolate chip pancakes.
That's just lazy writing. I'm just like, that's just 100% lazy writing, for sure.
Like, what would a kid say for breakfast? Candy. Like, got it. Well, we're here at the credits, and this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is Goodbye Charlie, as previously mentioned, Season 7, Episode 16. And just as a heads up, I didn't write notes before this episode, so I don't know. It may not be the smooth
train it usually is. I'm going to go out on a stretch and a limb. I'm going to go out on a limb.
Uh-huh.
I don't think there's going to be a noticeable difference.
There won't be a noticeable difference for you, but I think there will be for me, and I'll just deal with that anxiety myself.
There won't be a notable difference at all.
So we come back from the break. There's the two towers. And, oh, that's right. Danny wakes up at Russell's place.
Oops.
He also freaks out a little too hard, right? I think so.
I don't know. Have you ever freaked out? Have you ever woken up somewhere you're not supposed to be?
No.
Or somewhere that you were, like, woke up and... Well, no, like, you've woken up somewhere, like, you're supposed to be, but you're just not used to being there.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that's happened.
Yeah. And especially, like, he was drunk the night before, so maybe he thought when he woke up it was a dream, and then realizing he's somewhere else, trying to get his, Look, I'm not defending his acting. I'm just saying.
Look, there's one thing I won't do, and that's defend the acting of Ricky Schroeder. But, I mean, it's got to be hard to act in this scene when there's pictures of a much better actor still up around. Because I find it weird that she's like, have you ever seen a picture of Bobby? It's like, why would he have? Question mark.
Because, Kirk, Bobby is a god. And if you didn't learn about him in detective school, then was he paying attention?
They have a whole unit on just... Bobby Simone. Mm-hmm. Not Robert Simone, Bobby Simone. Mm-hmm. And then this is when she's like, look, I've been through my shit too, and it took Bobby to help me get comfortable with that and love somebody. And he's like, well, what happened? She's like, oh, I don't want to tell you. And he's like, then what was the point? Like, are you trying to relate to me? Or are you just trying to show me that your ex-husband was the shit and I'm trash?
So, the question I have to ask you, Kirk, is, does she use her dead husband to, like, hit on this kid?
No. I think... she uses her dead husband to give him an example that shit's gonna be hard, but you have to keep on trucking and try and be a little bit better.
Keep on trucking.
Because he knows that she doesn't drink by this point. He knows that she's kind of a recovering alcoholic herself. So she's coming from the place of, like, I know that there's some shit that's not going to make you, that's going to make you feel bad, but you got to look for people to help you get through. And he's like, thanks for the place to crash. And then she gives, like, a very motherly hand to the face. And then
She did that to him in the last episode too.
Yeah. Very motherly.
When they were hugging awkwardly in the bathroom. Sip always looks like dad when he's pissed.
What's Andy's problem?
That is a specific look, male look of a certain generation with that mustache and that anger look.
I like to call it the angry warthog. I also love how everybody... Everybody's on pins and needles. And then after he asks, he's like, how's it going? And then someone else is like, how's it going? Ask the question and duck the answer. You answered. Simwoods is fucking impossible. Charlie Sung.
So real quick, before I'm racist. This is a different Asian American detective that Medavoy knows and helps, right?
Well, he's not even a detective.
No, but it's not Medavoy. Medavoy doesn't help the other Asian detective. Caruso does, right?
I think Medavoy also deals with him too. I think we're thinking of the same guy. Because he's like semi-recurring, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the same guy. This guy is a dude who works for a hotel that gave Medavoy extra security work.
So Medavoy only knows the Asian guys?
No, I think everybody knows the other Asian detective. I just think Sipowicz only knows this guy personally because he worked with him.
Fair enough.
But basically...
This guy's name is... Mari on it, bitch. This guy's name is Keon Young.
Yes.
He also is in Deadwood as Mr. Wu.
Yes, he is.
Among many other things. Uh-huh. He's fucking great as Mr. Wu, even though he only says, like, 4 words in English. It's great. He's so good.
Yeah, I looked up his IMDb as well, and he's done a lot of shit and a lot of voice work.
Yeah, pretty much all the Kung Fu Pandas.
He was also
that's a lie, but he was in a lot of Kung Fu Pandas.
He also apparently did the English dubs for Squid Game. At least one of the characters and additional voices, according to IMDb.
He's good. He's a heavy hitter.
He's been around. He's been in a bunch of shit. Like, he has a very long IMDb. But he's in this as the head of security for a hotel, and he says that basically like an errand boy for the triads. I think the triads? Or...
Triads, Yakuza, what's the diff?
I mean, there is a big difference, but, you know, but mostly the nationalities of the people in them. But he...
Kirk, I'm American. Nationalities, schmationalities, okay?
Oh, shit, I forgot about this episode. This episode is dope.
Dope?
I love this episode. With this fucking weirdo?
Yeah. Dope?
Yeah, I love this episode. Basically, that other guy, Charlie, he says that there's an errand boy running around spending a bunch of money, like, he got a better job with the mafia, and he thinks that he may have stole it from the mafia or something worse. And Medavoy is like, I can't go on think something's happened. You have to give me more than that. And Charlie's like, well, I just hope it kind of clears up quickly and I don't end up in the middle of it. This kid comes in and is like, my parents are dead in my house. And they're like, you left them there? He's like, yeah, they were dead in my house and I came down.
But my question is what would you want them to do?
Well, he asked, did they call 911? Which I think would have been the first move.
Fair.
That's me. That's my thinking. But this guy brought in his girlfriend. I believe her name is Sugar?
Is that her... So, question. Is that her name? that like her name? You know what I mean?
I believe that is her name.
It's Sugar Griffin.
I believe her. I believe. I don't know why the last name made it really funny for me. So this is a mostly no dialogue montage. Where Sipowicz quickly puts it together that the crime scene has been messed with.
Yeah, Sipowicz has fished this out pretty quickly here. Sniff this one out really quick.
He also is like the, because I didn't really catch the name of the young son.
Of course he didn't.
Or the younger son.
Of course he didn't.
Oh, Roger Lundquist. He, by the way, he is now like unrecognizable. His more current photographs, he looks like a marine meathead. And that seems to be the only roles he gets.
That's who it is. Okay, because I clicked on his thing earlier and I was like, who is that in this episode? And I never would have thought it would be him.
Yeah, he got some muscles and he cut the hair. But yeah, this scene is really, really, really drawn out. And it's just Sipowicz doing his, using his detective vision like Batman. Going like, that doesn't make any sense. Also, did that kid put up drywall after shooting his parents?
What makes you think?
Oh, not drywall.
No, he didn't put it up. He probably just filled the holes with some spackle real quick and then, like, sanded and painted. Now, is he supposed to be sad right there?
I think he's freaking out because he can, like, he hears Sipowicz working out that they were actually murdered in there and then brought over here and posed. Which is what the kid did, because Sipowicz gives him the warthog. And the kid gets I think it's called the vertigo shot. They use it in Jaws and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, we
yeah,
got...
Yeah, but no, when he was sitting there, was he... it looked like he was trying to cry? Question mark?
I think he's freaking out because he can tell that they've already figured it out. And he is aggressive from moment one. Sure, thanks. He's like, here's all the movements in the house. You want me to initial it? Also, can you turn yours down a little bit? I can hear it through your...
Sorry. I didn't even turn it up, so that's weird.
This is the episode where she's like, oh, we met on a chat room, and he's like, on the internet? And he's like, no, just a room where people chat in real life.
People didn't know that at the time, dude. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know that. I'm just fucking...
At the time, that's all new.
We've never heard of a chat room outside of the internet. That's never existed. There's never been a chat room in physical place. And here we have...
I don't know if you're trying to be funny or not, but I'm not.
And here we have Jones basically telling Sugar, like, you feel pressured? Because this shit's going to come down on you if Roger did it.
You feel pressure? Let me give you even more pressure.
And then Jones is like, you sound like you're about to cry.
She breaks pretty quick, though, right? Like,
Are you saying she's not a real ride or die? You wouldn't take her and your crew?
Not at all. Like, he literally just, like flicks her and she freaks out.
Like, if she was in a car with Dominic Toretto and he was about to slingshot his car across a ravine using the rope of a bridge, she'd start freaking out. That's not who you want in the passenger seat.
Yeah, she wouldn't. She would not know what to do.
I'm not gonna talk about that because this is gonna air months from now. But the Fast X trailer dropped, Kyle.
Yeah, whatever, dude. That last movie was such a piece of shit. Like,
F9, the Fast Saga.
That movie was so bad.
So here we have more fancy in this episode than we've had all last episode, and I think the episode before.
Like they pretending to care, yeah.
What do you mean pretending to care?
About fancy.
Oh, the
right. Hey, here's some breadcrumbs, buddy. Like, was he, like, I haven't, like, dove, like, that deep into it, but, like, was he working on other shit? Like,
well, I do know that he directed one of these episodes. One or two.
I could see himself not putting himself in it.
So maybe he was like, I want to get behind the camera and...
That's a big deal. That's a big move to get behind the camera and be the man.
Also, like, this kid makes a joke about doing a little inputting with sugar, and it was like, dude, I feel like you've never seen a woman naked.
No, I agree.
Like, not saying that, like, he has no game. Just, like, he's so intense and weird and small that you're like, I feel like a lot of people would be repelled by you.
This is probably, like, one of the earliest, like, on-camera versions of, like, an incel.
Wait, the earliest versions of what?
Of, like, the earliest on-camera version of, like, an incel.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
But he's literally, like... They're like, hey, did your parents be okay? Were your parents okay with your relationship? He's like, I don't give a fuck. He's like, well, did your parents have a problem with you? He's like, no, her parents loved me, obviously. And then he's like, we're gonna get married soon. And they're like, sure, whatever, dog.
Yeah, he is. So, I mean, how much? We're halfway through.
We're halfway through.
Is this kid acting well?
No.
Okay.
Well, yes.
I feel like he goes through too many emotions. Like, I feel like he jumps all of the emotions so fast.
I feel like this episode is a really great example of how Sipowicz makes it impossible for people to just do their jobs. Because he gives some shit to Sorensen, and then Sorensen gives shit back, and he's like, that's it. No more shit giving. And then they go into this room to run it for fancy. And Sipowicz is like, what do you guys want to do? Who's getting approval? Whose interview is this? And it's like, what the fuck, man?
Sipowicz's pet peeve is people who wear the same clothes 2 days in a row.
Well, I think his pet peeve is he hates it when people like act like they control their own fate and don't consult him like they have to.
Yeah.
Because even Sorensen's like, excuse me while I burp my partner.
I love when he does that. I mean, that, like, sometimes Sorensen or Schroeder has like good rapport with Andy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I like sometimes I like when you watch them act, you're like, oh man, like I maybe there's a reason why they were like that. What they saw something in this guy with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like he can't get it all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Because this whole scene is Sipowicz like, I'm being an asshole to everybody because clearly you were out all night. And he's like, yeah, I drank a bunch because I was depressed and then I stayed at Diane's. And then Sipowicz is like, oh, so you slept it off at someone's place? And then he was like, if I had got into a fight or shot a guy, don't you think I'd be in a different state?
Yeah, and don't you think, like, I would have called you?
Like, don't you think things would be way different? And then after he hears this, Sipowicz is like, okay, let's be an adult today.
Yeah. All right, let's be cool. What's up? Like, yeah, it's a little annoying.
Because he was upset that, like, Baldwin and Jones... Not Baldwin and Jones, that's the same person. Jones and Fancy had already talked about Sugar being cool with Jones.
Yeah.
To, like, get the kid upset. And he's like, oh, so people are just running things without me in there? And it's like, dude, that happens all the time. We're talking about it now.
Take a breath.
We're being adults.
Yeah, the best part is he was like, I like when he's like giving your pre-approving tone, you're okay with this? And he's like, I told Baldwin to talk to you guys about it. He's like, I didn't approve anything. I told him to, like, go talk to you about it, and then we can talk about if we should move forward. It was just so funny.
So, essentially, this entire setup is to just dangle Jones getting fresh with Sugar by touching her arm. And he's like, did you take your arm off of her?
Yeah, dude, this kid goes through so many, like, the range of emotions is unbelievable to me. Like, but, like, he's not a good enough actor with the range to be able to do it, you know what I mean?
Well, I also think they're rushing it. Because it feels like a story like this, they would give, like, maybe, like, the Webster treatment.
Yeah, or like, or at least a whole episode, like deep whole episode.
But it also, I think it's kind of like, it's playing into that this kid is like barely hanging on. Where like, it only takes him like less than 2 minutes to be like, shut your stupid mouth! Stop being stupid. And it's like, Jesus, kid. Okay.
So either this kid like is a bad actor, or the character itself has always been on the verge of breaking down, and we're only getting his like final moment, like leading into the breakdown. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Like, what broke to make him kill his mom? We're seeing him become that person.
Mm-hmm.
But then, see right here, he's not mad. Like, he was on the verge of, like, if he had, like, a weapon killing Jones, and then he, like, kind of sat back there and was just like, what's up with that, dude?
I think he has...
Like, can he just touch her like that, dude?
I think... And man, and she drops the dime quick.
Oh, she's like, I ain't taking no heat from a white boy.
She's like, I have known this guy for a couple weeks. You can send him up the river.
This is why my family always told me, never date white guys.
She's like, all I did was talk to someone in a chat room. Do you think he started this relationship and tried to cultivate it to be like, see, I'm a good guy. I date black women. And also, he's like, of course I could date black women. they always want to date white guys. Like, he's subtly racist and an asshole in that decision.
I mean, I feel like if we were to break it down, we'd find out that, like, he probably, like, lied to her, obviously. But he's probably, like, a really big racist.
Oh, yeah. Well, he did have that moment where he yelled out that dumb black bitch, I believe he said. Yeah. And it's like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah, he's a racist.
I also like how Sibwitz keeps calling him Raj.
Yeah. Raj.
Right, Raj? Because Sibwitz goes hard. Because he's like, this guy's crazy. Like, he is a serial killer starting out, and I just need to fucking go hard on it. And then the guy says out loud, "You're sick for knowing the truth."
Yeah.
And it's like, wow. So that's like an entire case covered already.
Yeah, like, that, like, for the intense, the level of intensity that case kind of warranted, they do, like, fucking do it in, like, 1.5 time.
They do it very, very quickly. And then Charlie shows up, and he's doing a very creepy stand in the bathroom.
Yeah, that, right, for not being a cop, like, he was, how long has he been standing there? And I don't know, how long has he been standing there, and every time someone comes in, does he just start talking? Hoping that it's Metaboy.
Just so we could have this dramatic scene. So he's saying that he went to go to Tommy Cho. Tommy Chow. He's saying that he went to Tommy Chow's place to, like, let him know, like, hey, I don't know what's going on, but I think this guy's using your money, and it looks like maybe Tommy Chow has been murdered.
Not Tommy Chow.
And he's, like, saying, like, look, I'm fucked. Like, they're gonna think I'm in on this no matter what. And it's like, I don't understand why he thinks that.
Well, because if he's a security, they probably, like, expect him to, like, know some stuff or be privy and help with some things. They probably have worked out a deal, you know what I mean?
Oh, man. So is this racist, just assuming that Charlie would be into the Zen garden?
100%.
Okay. And then just the residual embarrassment that John Irvin feels. He's like, yeah. Oh,
but, like, Metaboy made it weird. Like,
now this scene goes on for way too long.
Yeah, this has a few Shyamalan twists.
Well, the first Shyamalan twist is there's two Gingers. He's got four prostitutes, and two of them are named Ginge. And this guy's also like, hey, fuck whichever one you want.
I mean, that's generous.
So this scene was very...
None of them have red hair, though. Why are they named Ginger?
No idea. I love how she's like, if I use my imagination, you're coming into this tub. He's not going to fit in that fucking tub.
Yeah, not even close. How do you two fit in that club?
So, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. It's so awkward that, like, there's just four sex workers in this place. Like, should we leave?
They know that these women are prostitutes, right?
Yes.
So, we're not gonna arrest them?
Well, Kyle, that's not what they're worried about right now. They're worried about a possible murder/robbery. They do this all the time, where they're just like, we know that you're, you know, engaging in sex work. We don't care. I love how it's like, hey, we're a cop. We're cops, Joey. And he's like, okay, here's his head.
Yeah, it does take, like, Shyamalan twist one.
Wait, that's twist one?
Oh, that's like kind of twist two, three.
And then we get a little butt. We get a little ass, because we were missing on the side boob and ass lately. So it's like, let's just get some sex workers in here.
There were four prostitutes around, and only two of them had no clothes on, so the ratio was off. We had to see something.
So here we got...
So can I be honest with you? When I first watched this,
yeah,
I was like, why is she mad?
Wait, why is the woman mad?
Yeah, because I was like, from what I kind of remember and understand, like, they don't live together.
Well, I mean, he's been kind of a dick.
No, that too, but she's mad because he didn't come home.
Uh-huh.
But she says, like, oh, like say that to whoever you spent the night with last night. But it's like they don't live together.
She does stay over. I mean, she's got shit at his place.
That doesn't mean you're living together.
Kyle's like, your name has to be on the lease for you to be upset that they're out all night.
No, not that, but like just because you spend the night all the time doesn't mean like that's your place. Do you know what I'm saying?
Vaguely, but she's allowed to be upset if there's an implication that maybe he spent the night with another person.
Did they make plans to meet up, or was she just assuming?
I mean, I don't know.
Like, did in his drunken thing, did they'd get in touch and he was like, oh, I'm coming home, and then never came home, you know what I mean?
I think that she's upset that, and here we have Sipwitz talking to Russell about it. I think she's upset that clearly he was having a really bad time in a bad way, and then he just kind of went radio silent and didn't show up back at his place, where she figured he'd be there to, you know, talk about it and get it under control, when really he was out, you know, doing God knows what. And instead of approaching that maturely, she instead was like, well, go say that to whoever you were with last night.
And I'll get my stuff.
I'll get my stuff.
And again, like, why should this man give a fuck about Bobby's picture?
No idea. Also, it's also weird that she's like, all he needs is love in his life, then everything will change. I'm like, that's not 100% true.
Yeah, like, if that was the case, go tell that to everyone on Skid Row.
Also, this scene is super weird, because it's just Charlie and Medavoy having themselves a little beer, and Charlie basically has a conversation like, look, I can't go back to my job. And it's like, why?
It seems like there's something like he can't tell Medavoy for some reason about, like,
the ins and outs.
Yeah. There's something he just can't tell them.
And it also seems like he's just super stoked to get to, what was it, Biloxi?
Biloxi.
Biloxi, Mississippi. Play some Pie Gal. But it's like, really? You want to go from New York to fucking Biloxi, Mississippi?
Hey, I get it, man.
Go to the West Coast. Go to, like, a cool place in Texas. Go to fucking...
Yeah, but you have to remember, at the time, there was no cool place in Texas.
Texas had no cool areas.
Like, you're still forgetting, like, you're forgetting that, like, this is Texas in, like, late 90s, early 2000s.
And this is basically the title's sake. He's saying goodbye to Charlie. And also, Charlie has, like, no family. Like,
yeah,
no other, like, close friends.
Like, is he going to go get his stuff?
I don't know. And then we have this woman threatening to move out by packing her shit.
He must know somebody in Biloxi.
He's got Biloxi homies.
Well, I mean, like, how does he know about, like, Pie Gal and Biloxi and shit if he doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, that's such a specific thing.
Well, he gets Pie Gal quarterly, and there's a big, bustling Biloxi chapter.
Yeah, Biloxi's a hotbed.
So this scene I kind of was annoyed by. Is like, he's like, hey, I'm gonna wait.
Did you see that though? She said, did she take you home from Max? And he goes, I slept my load off. He doesn't tell her he went there. He doesn't tell her he goes there. He answers the question, but he doesn't answer the question.
I enjoy, like I enjoy that he waits until she's, like, packing up to say something. Because I would take Umbridge. I would take Dolores Umbridge with the fact that you fucking wait until I'm getting my shit packed to just tell me what happened. Like, you couldn't have fucking said anything up until then.
But her whole thing was like, you know, like, this packing and unpacking shit. Like, I'm not gonna do it. It's like, well, then don't pack your shit. Like,
I think,
like, be a grown up. Let's have a conversation about this.
I think she, and we'll was go saying, from there. I think she was actually saying, packing and unpacking isn't new to us, and it's something we have to get used to in our relationship.
She's being a B.
But to me, I'm like, if that is a cornerstone of your relationship, it might be a bad one. Hey, you know what we do constantly? Pack and unpack and move into each other's places. After fights and whatnot. It's like, maybe. And I'm going to sound a little loopy here. Maybe you shouldn't be together. Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that was Goodbye Charlie. An episode I didn't write any notes on and forgot that there was a serial killer in it.
Was he a serial killer? He only killed 2 people.
But he had plans to kill more people. We talked over it where Sipowicz said it. He, like, had a dungeon at his other house, and he planned to kill Sugar and probably more people. So,
But had he killed more people?
Kyle, are we gonna do this?
Are we gonna do this? Thing, but it sounded like the way that they had set it up was like, he had this dungeon like set up that he was going to take Sugar to, and like maybe this was like the first time that it happened.
He was going to make the dungeon sweeter. Oh, that's right. Sugar is her name. Actually, I heard he has a side chick named Sweet and Low.
Oh God! Is she equal to the task?
Hey, Kyle, that joke was splenda. oh man.
What's another one?
I don't know. We should stop. I mean, what is there to talk about in this episode? The guy who played Roger was a little, you know, he did a whole lot very quickly in that episode. And I agree with you. They kind of sped through his shit really fast.
So fast.
They sped through his shit really fast to have a really long scene for a guy to just reveal that he killed a dude and took all of his money. To show us as much of the sex workers as we possibly could. Like, hey, there's four of them in here, and some of them are naked. And you're like, great. What does it have to do with what's going on?
You're right. It feels like there's something missing because, like, why did that guy have to run so fast? Why did the security guard for the, what the fuck thing is it?
The hotel?
Yeah.
Why did Charlie have to run out, like, so aggressively?
Yeah, like, why did he have to go to Biloxi so fast, like you were saying? Like, it's just all, like, that feels like it's something is missing that explains that.
Yeah.
But I don't think we'll ever get it.
It does feel like both stories in this episode that aren't Danny dealing with the consequences of sleeping on Russell's couch, which turns out to be very dire.
I think it's more of the him not saying anything
to his lady friend.
Yeah, like it's more of him like not saying what's happening.
Oh yeah, it seems like two stories that really could have used their own space.
Oh, for sure.
And they just didn't get it, so it just isn't, you know.
Yeah, for sure. They definitely needed to like. Look into that kid more, for sure. That's the one I feel like doesn't get its due the most, is like, it felt like you could have brought in something here. Like, killing his parents seems like the third episode, like the end of a second episode of a third parter, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, he kills his, like, something weird happens in the first one, and then you know, you move on, and then the second one, you're thinking of more and more, like, it could be him, and then bam, his parents are dead or something.
Like,
go from there.
Honestly, it almost feels like if it was a multiple episode thing, it would have been like, they got the case. The first episode is, like, them investigating other people that they think are involved. Then Roger would, like, let something slip. And then they would go at him all the second episode. And by the end of the second episode, they'd separate him from Sugar. And then Sugar would be like, I don't know what he's talking about. He told me to not mention this. I don't know him that well. And then they would cut her. And then the last episode would be like just interviews with him, getting him to break down and admit what he did. Like, it would have been a whole story. But this one is like...
And Sipowicz, like, dealing with Sorensen while dealing with the kid. It feels like there was something like they just tried to half-ass it, whereas, like, before they would have put the time into it.
And, they rushed all that shit, but then they also took way too much time with the, like, slow panning over the crime scene.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I feel like if you had just cut to the chase where they go, it's like, they were staged here. And then Sipowicz looks at two things and is like, they were shot in here and then brought here. Why would that happen? And then just cut to the interrogations. Like, I don't know. It was weird pacing and weird, weird cutting. But that happens. Yeah. It happens.
No, it's definitely weird. Yeah, it, like, didn't make sense.
I guess just
not to spoil anything, not a lot's gonna start making sense, guys.
Big ups to Keone Young, who's been in a little bit of everything, and he was all right in this episode.
Yeah, he's good. It's just, like, again, a weird, like, it's such a weird, weird story to, like, do. Like, hey, like,
because
your character's just gonna want to leave. Wait, what? Yeah. Like, you're just gonna leave. Yeah. What about all my shit? Nah. Like, you're so scared you're gonna leave. Like, scared of what though? Like, you haven't told me what I'm scared of.
It also feels like that's like that's a whole nother thing where it could have been like they get the murder of that crime boss and no one's speaking, like no one's saying anything, and then this hotel guy comes in to talk to Medavoy and says, like, hey, I heard you got a case about this dude. One of his underlings has started spending money lately. And then it turns into like a two-parter where you find out that the hotel owner is also involved, but he, like, they play it off like he's a good guy and he never wanted to do this, and he kind of like fell into it. And then Medavoy helps him escape, because even Medavoy knows, like, oh shit, like, if he stays here, he's gonna die based on what happened. But instead, it microwaves all of that to be like, he did it, he's the killer, oh my gosh, I'm gonna die, I need to get out of here.
Yeah, oh my gosh, it happened on my watch. Yeah, but you didn't cut this dude's head off.
It also just doesn't help that Medavoy the entire time is like, what are you talking about? Why would this be a problem for you?
Yeah.
So, like, even the character that we know is saying, like, this doesn't really make any sense. Weird episode.
It is very weird.
Goodbye, Charlie. And I guess goodbye to you. Thank you for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls, assuming you listened to it and didn't just skip to the end. If you need the show NYPD Blue in your life, it is on Hulu and it is on Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime has, I believe, the full edits, but they look like the original standard definition and are kind of boxy. And Hulu has the syndication edits, so they look great in that HD, but sometimes they have some stuff cut out of them, so you have to make a decision on what you prefer. If you just need more NYPD Blue information, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons. What Would Sipowicz Do? Written articles about the show at different seasons and different points. And then Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue on Amazon for 99 cents. We're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. We're on Instagram at Asher Bros Podcast, mostly only mentioning when new episodes of the podcast are coming out. And I myself, I'm at Kirk Has Glasses Everywhere, including Twitch, where I watch public domain movies and play video games. Have a good one. Peace.